We'll say good morning. Let's begin. So we pick up today's daf is Kuf Yud Zayin 117. We're picking up at the Mishnah on Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. The Mishnah. Three lines are from the bottom. Bishamay or Bishamay say Tinase Vetitol Ksuvasa. And I'm both saying this Mishnah is a continuation of the previous one. Where in the previous one, remember what we established was that the circumstances under which a woman is believed to say that her husband died and therefore she's permitted to get remarried. So Beis Shammai says in any situation where we give a woman a license to remarry, that automatically means that she has a license to collect her ksuva as well. Beis Silo say no, Tilase Velo Titol Ksuvasa. Beis Silo says no, it's actually very interesting. All she is believed about is the ability to go ahead and get remarried. But she is not believed in a financial sense to be able to go ahead and get her ksuva. Amrullah Beis Shammai. So Beis Shammai said to Beis Hillel, Hitartem erva chamura lo natir mamon akal. So Beis Shammai says, I don't understand your position. You're allowing her to get remarried, which is an erva, which is issues of morality. So you're allowing her to get remarried based on her testimony, not going to allow her to go ahead and collect her ksuva. Sounds a little bit strange. So the Gemara says, Amrullah Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says, Matzinu tap of kof yud zayin, she'en ha'achin nichnasa l'nachala apia. But yet, we've already established elsewhere, and Rashi quotes over here, Shnein ha'ach nechnas l'nachala shabala apia, drachmana ama api shnaim edim, ulegabi nisum dida, hu da'akilu mishum aguna. So Beis Hillel says, but look, we see, for example, when she testifies that her husband died, so the Maisa, let's say, for example, the closest male heirs he has are his brothers. Yet we know that those brothers cannot go ahead and take the deceased brother's estate based on her testimony. So Beis Hillel says, we have biblical precedent for this idea, that although she is believed mishum iguna, in order that there shouldn't be an aguna issue, she can remarry, yet that doesn't automatically translate into financial credibility to allow the brothers to take the estate. Amru lehem Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says, 1 second. V'alo misefer ksuva nilmod. Why don't we just look at what the ksuva says? What does the ksuva say? Shuko save law. Because remember, what did he write for in the ksuva? She'im tinasi la'acher, titli ma'ashe kosuv lechi. Because what does it say in the ksuva? In the ksuva, he writes to her, when you remarry, meaning when you have the ability to remarry, you will be entitled to take all that is written in the ksuva. So we'll say that seems to be pretty explicit that what? That the ksuva is collectible when? At the moment that she becomes eligible for remarriage. So as soon as she's permitted to remarry, then technically speaking, again, she's permitted to collect everything in the ksuva. The Chazur Beis Hillel holds Beis Shammai, and Beis Hillel retracted their original position, and in the end, paskin like Beis Shammai, that indeed, in any of these cases where she has the permission to get remarried, she also has the ability to claim her ksuva. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chisda, Nisyav ma yivama nichnas l'nachala apia. So Rav Chisda said, remember, let's say a woman shows up and she says, my husband died, and let's say again, it satisfies the criteria that we discussed earlier, and therefore the ma'isa, again, she's going to get remarried. In this case, let's say it's not going to be remarriage, but instead she's going to do Yibum. So if Chista says, in the same way that she is permitted to do Yibum, based on her testimony, so the Yavam is also entitled to the property of the deceased brother. In other words, we'll say, it's just an extension of what we established in the Mishnah. That the same way according to Beis Shammai in the Mishnah, once she's believed to say that she can get remarried, she's also believed to what? She's also believed to get her ksuva. So too, if she's believed to say that her husband is dead and therefore she's doing Yibum, the Yavam is also entitled now to inherit his deceased brother's property. Heim darshu medrash ksuva. Arlo Nidrash Midrash Torah. So if Chista said, you know, in the Mishnah, they darshin from the Lashon of the Ksuva, so we'll darshin from Pesukim. What does the Pasuk say? Yakum al Shem Ochiv Amrachmana. The Pasuk says that the Yavam will fill the place, literally will stand in the name of his brother, will fill the place of his deceased brother. Vahare Kam. And look, at the end of the day, this individual has done Yibum, therefore, by definition, he has fulfilled the criteria of staying in his brother's place, and therefore, Lemais, again, he is entitled to collect the estate of his brother. Amar Avnachman, Avnachman said, Basal Adin Va'amra, Meis Baili, Hitirunili Nase. So, Ranachman says, the fine woman shows up in Beis, and she says, my husband died, permit me to get remarried. So what's the halacha? Matirin osalina, say we allow her to get remarried. Now I'll say, obviously, you've already established the process is a little bit more complicated than that. But again, we're just giving the process over shorthand. So she shows up, my husband died, permit me to get remarried. We permit her to get remarried, and V'nostin l'ksuvasa. We give her a ksuva. We give her a ksuva based in line with what we said in the Mishnah. However, the Gemara says, V'nostin l'ksuvasa. T'nuli ksuvasi. But if she shows up in Beis Din and says, look, my husband died, give me my ksuva. So in that case, says the Gemara, says Rav Nachman, afli hi nase in matirinosa. Not only will we not give her a ksuva, but we don't allow her to remarry in those circumstances as well. Why? My time, adaita de ksuva asoi. Because they will say, it would appear that what? Somebody shows up in Beis Din and says, my husband's dead, where's the money? Right? So again, that tends to look a bit suspicious in the eyes of a Beis Din. So also remember, when the Gemara says that we don't allow her to remarry, what it's saying over here is, we're not going to allow her to avail herself of the leniency of Eid Echad. But again, she could bring, if she's able to produce other witnesses, that's fine. But she shows up, says, my husband's dead, give me the money. So at the end of the day, that's we're concerned that she's coming for the ksuva, and therefore we don't allow her to remarry. And obviously, if she can't remarry, she can't collect the ksuva either. Yibai Luz, the Gemara is a kasha. What happens if she shows up and she says, hitiruni lihinas, eh? Utinu li ksuvasi. So as she shows up amazing, she says, listen, my husband died, permit me to remarry, and give me my ksuva. Okay, so we'll say, now she's saying both of these things, right? Permit me to remarry, and give me my ksuva. So mahu, what is the halacha? What is halacha? Kevan de amra ksuva sa adaita de ksuva asai. So maybe on one hand you could say, look, at the end of the day, she mentioned her ksuva. So because she mentioned her ksuva, then maybe that's the red flag. Maybe that's the red flag, and therefore we shouldn't let her get remarried. Ultimately, the other possibility is kol mili de is la leinish amar lehu lebedina. Or the other possibility is what? That perhaps at the end of the day, when a person comes to Beis Din, what do? They kind of just go ahead and put all of their issues on the table in front of Beis Din. So when this woman comes to Beis Din, she says, look, here's why I'm here. My husband died. I like to be able to get remarried. But there's also the matter of the ksuva. So Lamaisa, what she's doing is she's just putting all of her issues on the table. So which one is it? The imtim salomar, kol mili di isli l'inish, amr lehu l'beidina. And if you want to say that indeed, when a person comes to Beis Din, they just put all of their issues on the table in front of Beis Din. Tinu li ksuvasi, vehetiruni lihinase mahu. What happens if she says, my husband died, give me my ksuva, and permit me to get remarried? Now, I will say, in this case, she reversed the order. She put ksuva first, and then permission to get remarried. Mahu, what is the halacha? Hacha vada adaita de ksuva sa'asai. Here, it is clear that she's coming for the ksuva. How is it clear that she's coming for the ksuva? Because she's mentioning that first. Oh, the other possibility is, hoyo de lo yoda b'may mishtarya. Rabbi said, the other possibility is, look, she may just be ignorant with the process. And because she's ignorant with the process, she's not sure what it is exactly that allows her to get remarried. Is it the establishing of the fact that her husband died? Is it the fact that Beis Din will allow her to collect the ksuva? So she's not sure exactly what it is that permits her to get remarried, and therefore she just puts everything on the table. Look at Rashi. De lo yoda b'may mishtarya. V'chevan de'eskir nisuin galya daite dilemishreyasa. And since she mentioned that not only did her husband die, but she wants to get remarried, so she indicates what her intention is. V'had amra bereisha tenu li ksuvasi shema kisvura hi shezuhatarasa. And the only reason maybe she mentioned ksuva first was because perhaps in terms of remarriage, getting your ksuva is a necessary step in order to go ahead and get remarried. To which the Gemara answers, teku. Lemaisa, again, we're not exactly sure how to read into her words. So we'll say, what comes out from this sugya is the following. First of all, we paskin like Beis Shammai, even Beis Hillel paskins like Beis Shammai, that in any situation where Beis Din grants the woman the right to remarry based on her own testimony, it also grants her the right of collection of her ksuva. That's established fact number one. The other piece that seems to be agreed upon in this particular situation is that obviously if she does yibum as a result of her testimony, the yavam is able to go ahead and take the property of the deceased brother. Also established. Number three is the situation of Rav Nachman. Here's what we do know. If she goes ahead and she shows up, the only two cases everyone seems to agree on, she shows up in Beis Din, she goes in and she says, allow me to remarry, my husband died, allow me to remarry, we allow her to remarry, and we give her the ksuva. However, if she says, my husband died, give me my money, everyone agrees in that case, what? that Lamaisa, we don't allow her to remarry, and we certainly don't give her the ksuva because we're concerned that it's about the money. The machlokis cases is where she says both things and in both orders. She says, hitiruni l'inase, allow me to remarry and give me my ksuva, or give me my ksuva and allow me to remarry. That's where the Gemara has the suffix as to how we understand her words, and that question ends with the teiku, says the Mishnah. Hakol me'emana l'ha'idah. Now, here's what's interesting. So what we've established in the last number of Mishnah is that there's an incredible kula, there's an incredible leniency when it comes to testifying that a husband died. And an eid echad, one witness is believed to go ahead and testify about that a husband died. Not only is an eid echad believed, but the woman herself is believed. And Rabbi said that what comes out of this is, once we're believing an eid echad, it also becomes clear that the eid echad need not be a kasher witness. But even if the eid echad again is a apostle, we still go ahead and believe the eid echad. So now the Mishnah is going to give the exceptions to this rule. Who is not believed? Sakol ne'amanim, everyone is believed. Lahaida, to go ahead and give testimony for this woman that her husband died. Chutz mechamosa, except for her mother-in-law. Bas chamosa, the daughter of her mother-in-law, i.e. her sister-in-law. Vitzarasa, her co-wife. V'yevimta, also remember, yevimta means her sister-in-law, meaning a potential co-wife. So that's the Yavama case over here. So Reuven and Shimon are married to two women. So again, Shimon's wife, is Reuven's wife's Yevimta, her Yevama, the woman who may one day become her co-wife. Ubas Baila. Bas Baila means the daughter of her husband, who is not her daughter. So a stepdaughter. I'm both saying, now what's the chap in all of these cases? Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Vivimta, Isha Sivama, Fetaima de Kulu, Mipne Shesonos Osa. Umiskavnos lekalkala. So we'll say the common denominator between all the women mentioned in the Mishnah is they all hate the wife. Generally, again, they all, not hate is a strong word. There is a general animosity between a woman and her mother-in-law, a woman and her sister. It's actually interesting, by the way, that like halacha even recognizes these stressful situations. It doesn't lav dafka hate. What it just means is there's a built-in animosity, and we'll see why. We'll see why. So remember, so what the Mishnah is saying over here is the mother-in-law doesn't like her, the daughter of the mother-in-law, sister-in-law doesn't like her, co-wife doesn't like her, future co-wife, potential co-wife, the Yevimta doesn't like her, stepdaughter doesn't like her. Therefore, in all of these cases, if one of these women shows up and says to the wife, good news, bad news, depending on the marriage, your husband died, right? Your husband died, you are free to remarry. The Mishnah says, we do not believe these women. So finish the Rashi. The reason of the Mishnah is all these women dislike the wife. And they may try to purposely mislead her. Chamosa sona shomeres beliba zutocha kol yigi'i va'amali. So the mother-in-law doesn't like her daughter-in-law. Why, Rabbosai? Because remember, here's what's interesting. So the mother-in-law works, right? The mother-in-law works and she goes ahead and she accrues assets. And it goes to her husband. Now, when her husband dies, if her husband predeceases her, remember, a wife doesn't inherit a husband. Who's going to inherit the husband? Children, sons. So what's going to happen? So the son, will call him Reuven, is going to go ahead and inherit the father. And who's going to end up enjoying the benefits of all of this money? The daughter-in-law. So the mother-in-law is inherently resentful that one day the daughter-in-law is probably going to inherit all of the money that she worked hard to go ahead and bring to the marriage. Okay? V'chin bas chamosa, omere zuterish kol amalavi. That's the same reason, by the way, for the sister-in-law. So the daughter of the mother-in-law, same thing, because they're both saying, interestingly enough, the daughter of the mother-in-law, right, the daughter of the patriarch of the family, she's not going to inherit anything where there are brothers. So she's upset because she doesn't inherit anything, but yet what? Her sister-in-law, by way of the sister-in-law's husband, which is, again, this woman's brother, ultimately, again, will inherit everything. So interestingly enough, as it is with most familial strife, it's all about money. It's all about money. So that's what it is. It's not the pshat, like, you know, the mother-in-law jokes. It's like, this is all an issue of who is going to get the money at the end of the day. And by the way, let's also point out, there's also an amazing thing, how familial strife about money doesn't even have to revolve around monetary issues that are current. It also revolves around perceived monetary issues that will unfold in some unknown future. Furthermore, again, he says, so the Yevimta, which is the sister-in-law, who could one day become the co-wife, ultimately doesn't like her because they can become co-wives. Nobody likes the co-wife. No co-wife likes her fellow co-wife. Ubas baila. And what about a stepdaughter? Zuba bimkom imi va'ocheles kol amala. The stepdaughter is resentful. Why? Because she feels that her birth mother worked hard, perhaps brought things to the marriage, and now this stepmother is enjoying the benefit of all of her mother's labor. So therefore, again, in all of these cases, if any of these women show up in Beis Din and say to the wife, your husband died, we don't believe them because we assume that they have a vested interest in messing her up. Ma bein get lemisa. But I will say, interestingly enough, that we know, actually we'll see this in Gittin, that interestingly enough, that even these women who are not believed to testify that a man died in order to free his wife are believed if they go ahead and they bring a get. And they say, b'fanei nechta hu b'fanei nechta. When we get to Gittin, we'll see that one of the takanos we had by Gittin is that any get written outside of Eretz Yisrael, you have to testify b'fanei nechta hu b'fanei nechta. You have to testify, it was written in front of me, it was signed in front of me, i.e. it's lishma. Yet these women are believed to testify about the lishma of a get. So why is it that they're not believed to testify that the husband died, but they are believed to testify that the get was written lishma, to which the Gemara answers... there's a very simple distinction. When it comes to a get, Rabbosai, remember, the get pretty much stands on its own. There's a document here that says that Reuven divorced Rachel. It's here, it's right in front of us. The only missing piece, only piece of confirmation we want is what? Is that it was written in the Shema. We trust her to provide that confirmation. Because why? Because the majority of the her believability doesn't come from her words. It comes from the document that's standing right in front of us. As opposed to in this case, where a woman testifies about the death of a man, the entire believability or the entire ability for the woman to remarry is based on what? Is based on the testimony of this woman. Because this woman has a vested interest in messing up the other, we are not willing to believe her. So in a case of get, where we have independent corroboration of her words, that she is divorced, i.e. the get, then we believe her. But in the case of Mace Baila, where her testimony is what's telling us that Lamaisa, the husband, died, that we're not willing to believe her. Ibailahu, Bas Chameha Mahu. So we'll say, the Mishnah stated the daughter of the mother-in-law, as one of the women who has an inherent animosity towards the wife. What about the daughter of the father-in-law? So the Gemara says, Ma, what is the halacha? Does she also have this animosity, or is she believed in some way? On one hand, Taima de Bas Chamos Mishum de Ika, Ema de Sanyala. On one hand, maybe the reason why we disqualify the daughter of the mother-in-law from giving this testimony is because since the daughter sees that her mother has this animosity towards the wife, so the daughter will share that animosity, right? That again, the truth is she doesn't really have so much her own animosity, but if mom hates this lady, I hate her also. Familial allegiance, right? So maybe that's why she's disqualified. However, but in the case of the daughter of the father-in-law, there is obviously no mother who hates the wife. Therefore, perhaps she should be believed if she comes to give testimony that the husband died. Oh, Dilma, perhaps the other possibility is time of the Bas Chamosa. Maybe the reason why the daughter of the mother-in-law is not permitted to give testimony is because she too hates the wife. Why? She hates the wife on her own. Because the daughter of the mother-in-law doesn't like her sister-in-law, her brother's wife, because she says, look, this woman at the end of the day is going to eat all of the fruits of the labor of my mother. She's going to go ahead and eat up all of my mother's earnings. So to over here, she could have that same argument that she could say, listen, I don't like my sister-in-law because my sister-in-law is going to eat up all of the assets of my father-in-law's home. Because when my father-in-law dies, that property is going to pass to my brother, and ultimately it's going to be my sister-in-law who eats it all up. Tashma. So let's bring a braisa. Everyone is believed to testify that a man died, except for the five women mentioned in the Mishnah. V'im Isa, and if you really felt that a daughter of the father-in-law should also be disqualified, shis havyon. Then the truth is, it's not five women, it's what? It's six women. So the fact that the Mishnah caps it at five seems to answer that question by itself. To which the Gemara says, no, Dilma, Taima de Bas Chamosa, de Amra Ka'achla Legirsana de Bein Ashoi. Loshna Bas Chamosa, Veloshnabas Chameha. No, it's not necessarily true, because if you go with the idea that the reason that the daughter of the mother-in-law can't go ahead and testify is because she dislikes the sister-in-law, because the sister-in-law is going to eat up all of her mother's property. So that same logic applies to the daughter of a father-in-law. So the Mishnah does not need to mention her separately, because it's understood. Once you disqualify daughter of the mother-in-law because she's upset that her sister-in-law is going to, or her brother's wife, is going to eat up all of the assets that her mother worked so hard to make. So too, again, that obviously includes what? The daughter of the father-in-law as well, because she will have that same animosity, because she feels that her sister-in-law, her brother's wife, will go ahead and enjoy all of the property that the father accrued over his lifetime, while this daughter of the father-in-law will not. So the Gemara says, but we learned, chutz mishavan ashim. Oh, but there's another Mishnah. The other Mishnah says that in fact there are seven women who can't testify, to which the Gemara says, hahi Rabbi Hudahi. So that reflects Rabbi Huda. This man, Rabbi Huda Moshe, Rabbi Huda added on two additional women who cannot testify about the death of a woman's husband. And who are they? Av, Eshes Av. So we'll say Eshes Av is a stepmother. So a stepmother may not go ahead and testify in court that the husband of her stepdaughter died. We don't believe her. V'hakala, and the daughter-in-law. Daughter-in-law may not testify in court that her mother-in-law's husband, i.e. her father-in-law, her father-in-law died. She's not permitted. She's not believed. So the Gemara says once, the Gemara says to Rabbi Huda, Amr lo eishes av, harehi bichla basabal. So the rabbi said to Rabbi Huda, but one second, the truth is the case of the mother-in-law is kind of included in the case of the stepdaughter. Right? V'kala harehi bichlal chamosa. And the truth is, again, a daughter-in-law is included in the case of a mother-in-law. So meaning, the idea is once you establish certain familial patterns, that in step relationships there's an animosity, so once you tell me that by a stepdaughter, I understand that by what? By a stepmother. Once you tell me that there's an issue between a daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law, I understand the prohibition doesn't just apply to the mother-in-law, but also applies to the daughter-in-law as well. Rabbi Huda will say like this, Bishlama chamosa sanya lakala, I understand that a mother-in-law hates her daughter-in-law. The amra, I will say now again, remember, I mean, we're using the word hate. Hate is a very strong word, but that's what sanya means. Sanya does mean hate. But again, what it means is that there's an inherent tension in the relationship. So we understand that a mother-in-law doesn't like her daughter-in-law. The amra ka'achla ligir sanai. Because again, remember, the mother-in-law is inherently resentful because she works hard to bring property into the marriage. And then when her husband dies, ultimately it's going to go to her son and her daughter-in-law is going to use all of it. Elakala. My time is sanya lechamosa, but why does a daughter-in-law dislike her mother? I understand why a mother-in-law doesn't like a daughter-in-law. There's a strong financial reason not to like your daughter-in-law, because one day your daughter-in-law is going to get pretty much all of your property. And that's a hurtful, that's a difficult reality. But why would a daughter-in-law not like a mother-in-law? So the Gemara says, my time is sayin lechamosa, bishla basabal the sayin isha sa'a, I'm sorry, elakala, my time is the sayin lechamosa. Why would a daughter-in-law not like her mother-in-law? Bishlama bas habal disanyala isha sa'av. I understand why it is that the bas habal is a stepdaughter would hate her stepmother. Why? Da'amra ka'achla ligir sanoi de'im. Because remember, the stepdaughter is resentful because this new woman came into her deceased mother's role and now is presumably benefiting from all of the work, from all of the assets that her mother accrued in the marriage. Ella Aisha Sa'av, my time is Sanya the Basabal. But why is it that ultimately what? Why is it that a stepmother would go ahead and hate the stepdaughter? So the Gemara is asking on Rabbi Huda, because Rabbi Huda included these two additional cases of daughter-in-law, kala, and stepmother. The Gemara is saying, I don't understand why a daughter-in-law would not like her mother-in-law, and I don't understand why a stepmother wouldn't like her stepdaughter. Ella, my mosif tarti. So why does Rabbi Huda add these two cases? Ella, kala, my time is sanya lechamosa. Somebody says, I'll tell you, why does a daughter-in-law not like her mother-in-law? Dimigala libna kol da'avarit, kol da'avda. Because what happens? Because what does a mother-in-law do? A mother-in-law will often go ahead and point out all of the imperfections of her son's wife, right? I can't believe your wife did this, or she did this, or she cooks like this, or whatever else is. Because remember, again, no one's good enough for the son. So the mother-in-law will point out all of the negative things in her daughter-in-law. So the Gemara says, Eishes Av, so to again a stepmother, Sanya Labas Habal, will go ahead and hate the stepdaughter. Why? Demegala La'aviha, I'm sorry. Eishes Av, this is a stepmother, will also go ahead and dislike the stepdaughter. Why? Demegala La'aviha called the Avda, because the stepdaughter again will reveal to his father everything she sees the stepmother doing wrong. And therefore, Lamaisa, again, that's a Rabbi Huda adds these two additional cases. Why don't Rabbanon add these cases? What's this amazing? Because Rabbanon say, Kimayim haponim leponim, kain leif ha'adam la'adam. The same way that you see your reflection in the water, so too the heart of man mirrors to one another. In other words, what's the Rabbanon say, quoting this beautiful pasuk in Mishlei, is the truth is, relationships are very often reflective. Meaning what? That if someone hates you, chances are what? Over time, you are going to develop those same feelings of animosity towards them. So the Gemara says over here, very, very profound idea. So the Gemara says over here, which is also interesting, because sometimes the way this comes up is people think that someone else doesn't like them, and they develop those feelings of dislike for the other, when in fact, the other may not feel that way, which is just an interesting dynamic in and of itself. So the Rabbanon say, once you establish for me that what? That a mother-in-law doesn't like her daughter-in-law, you don't need to add in an additional case of a daughter-in-law not liking her mother-in-law. Why? Why? Because that's obvious. Because once that dynamic is established, of course, if I'm a daughter-in-law and my mother-in-law doesn't like me, of course, no matter how much of a tzaddikis I am, over time, I'm going to end up not liking her either. As much as I don't like to admit that reality, that's just the way that it is. If the stepdaughter doesn't like the stepmother, it's just a matter of time until the stepmother has negative feelings towards the stepdaughter. Therefore, according to the Rabbanon, there is no need to articulate those two additional cases explicitly. It's understood. But Rabbi Huda will say, no, hahi, b'divrei Torah k'siv. That pasuk of kemayim aponim l'aponim kein leif ha'odom la'odom is not talking about emotions or feelings, but rather it's talking about Torah. If you look at Rashi, Rashi's b'divrei Torah k'siv, lefi ponim, v'leiv sha'ata nosin l'Torah, libcha omid l'cha lahamid girsa, im yagata ba timsa, im lo yagata ba lo timsa. Both say a very important idea. Kemayim aponim l'aponim, the Gemara essentially says, Rabbi Huda understands, is the more of yourself, the more of your panim you put into Torah, the more you will acquire. The more of your heart you put into Torah, the more you acquire. But it's a very important yisod, because we live in an age today where we want everything, we want it fast, really without any kind of amelos. So we want Torah, but the truth is, we don't really want to have to invest ourselves very heavily into it. I'll come when I want to come, I won't come, whatever it is, I don't have to push myself. And the truth is, we know what happens, is if you don't push yourself, and if there's no yigiyus, and if there's no amelos, and if you're not working hard, you're not going to get all that much out of the experience. Again, you'll get some schar for learning, but how much Torah your kone is all about how much you're willing to invest yourself, how much panim, how much leave you're willing to put in. Invest yourself a lot, the returns will be incredible. Invest yourself minimally, just put your pinky toe in the water of Torah, and the return will be the same. Rabbi Hud, the Gemara goes weiter. Amar Avacha bar Avya, Bo'u b'ma'arava. They asked the following kashin Eretz Yisrael. Ma'arava means West Eretz Yisrael. Chamos abar la'acha mikamarava. So listen to this. Now really getting into significant chakiris in mother-in-laws. What about a future mother-in-law? Now, I'll say, what does that mean? It doesn't mean you're engaged. What it means is the following. Chamos abar la'acha mikan means like a situation of potential yibum. For example, let's say again, Rachel's married to Reuven now. Rachel's married to Reuven now, but there's the possibility if Reuven dies without children, she'll fall before Yibum to Shimon. Now remember again, to be eligible for Yibum, you only have to be paternal brothers, you don't have to be maternal brothers. So let's say Reuven and Shimon have two different mothers. So now what happens? So now the question is, let's say, is Shimon's mother permitted to give testimony to Reuven's, about Reuven's wife, that Reuven died? Now technically speaking, Shimon's mother is Reuven's wife's potential mother-in-law. Because if Reuven dies without children, she falls to Yibum for Shimon, so the Maaseh again, Shimon's mother becomes her mother-in-law. Is she believed to give testimony or not? Mi maska daita de misbal v'nafla kameyavam v'sanyula. Does she think about the fact that the husband of Rachel might die and she may fall before the yavam, become married to her, and therefore she become a mother-in-law, v'sanyula, and therefore she hates her now? Meaning that, again, it's not just the pshat that a mother-in-law hates her present daughter-in-law, but a mother-in-law hates any potential daughter-in-law, right? Is that one possibility? Oh, lo, or perhaps no. Perhaps, again, remember, the animosity that we're discussing is really based in a financial reality, and that financial reality that one day that her daughter-in-law is going to eat up all the family assets does not apply right now. Tashma, so we learned in our Braisa, Amra meis bali v'acharkach meis chami, tinase v'titol ksuva v'chamosa asura. If a woman comes along and says that she gives testimony, she says, my husband died, and my father-in-law died, so she is permitted to remarry, and she takes her ksuva, but the mother-in-law is not permitted to remarry. Mai taima, chamosa asura. Why do we say that the mother-in-law is not permitted to remarry? Lav mishum da'aminon lo baila mayis, v'lo chameha mayis. Because what we're concerned about, I'll say in this case, is the following. Perhaps the woman who's coming to give testimony is lying. Her husband didn't die, and her father-in-law didn't die. So why is she doing this? And the reason why she's giving this testimony is to mess up her mother-in-law. Because why does she want to mess up her mother-in-law? Because this way, again, she tells her mother-in-law, your husband died. If the testimony is accepted, mother-in-law will get remarried. If mother-in-law gets remarried, then what happens? Father-in-law comes back. It turns out that what? She committed adultery, and she's asura to everyone. Now, both say, if the daughter-in-law pulls that off, she has successfully removed the mother-in-law from the family unit. So perhaps she has kavana to go ahead and mess her up. Savra labasar shaita lotisi titzrin, because finally the day will come where this woman will no longer bother me. So both say, so what do you see from here? You see from here that lamaisa, again, a daughter-in-law is not permitted to give any kind of testimony regarding her mother-in-law, to which the Gemara says, well, you can't necessarily bring a raya from this case. Dilma shiny hasam diragish la tzara. We'll say this case that you're talking about over here is an already established mother-in-law and daughter-in-law relationship. Therefore, again, there may be some level of hurt and there may be some level of animosity that already exists. That's when you have to have a chashash that perhaps, again, a daughter-in-law is lying. But in the case that you asked about on Amud Beis, about a future mother-in-law, so Lamayis, again, in that case, there is no relationship yet that is established, and therefore, perhaps in that situation, one need not be concerned for any type of animosity. So we'll say, so the Gemara doesn't end off in a conclusive way. It appears that the way that Rambam Paskin appears, Rambam Paskin's, that in that kind of case, we would not allow a future mother-in-law to testify about a potential daughter-in-law's marital state as well. So let's say in this case over here, the mother of Shimon, who would potentially become the mother-in-law of Reuven's wife, should she be believed that Reuven died without children, we would not accept her testimony as in her capacity as a future mother-in-law. Says the Mishnah, Eid Omer Meis Vinisei. So what's another case? One witness says, comes to Beis and says about the woman that her husband died. And what happened? Uba echad va'amar lomes. And a second witness comes along and says, no, he didn't die. What's that? Like a harezulot teitze. So both say she should not. The assumption the Mishnah is making is she remarried after the testimony of the first witness. Now second witness comes along and says, no, he didn't die. She need not leave the new marriage. Okay, Eid Omer Meis. One witness says husband died. Ushnaim Omrim Lo Meis. Two witnesses say no, he didn't die. Afa Pishani says in this case, even though she already remarried, Teitze. Because we'll say this is obvious, right? Because now she has two witnesses, and obviously two witnesses against one are going to be stronger, and therefore the Meisah bless you, she has to go ahead and leave the second marriage. Shnaim Omrim Meis. Two witnesses say the husband died. The Eid Omer Lo Meis, and one witness says that he didn't die. In this case, even if she did not yet marry, she's permitted to marry. In other words, we both say that we lend absolutely no credence to the testimony of the Eid Echad when the two witnesses say something to the contrary. Says the Gemara, Taima Denises. So the reason, I both say, it's about the first case of the Mishnah, where you have an Eid Echad that showed up and said, husband died, and then what happened? And then a second witness comes along, she gets married, and then a second witness comes along and says he didn't die. So the Mishnah says lo teitze. Now the Gemara infers from that the reason lo teitze is why? Because she married. because she married, right? Halo nises lo tinase. But the inference from that is that if, let's say, she had witness number one who said husband died, and then witness number two said that the husband didn't die and she did not yet marry, the inference is what? That we would tell her not to marry. V'ha'amar Ula, but Ula said, 1 second, komakum shemina Torah eid echad, hare kan shnayim, ve'in devarav shal echad bimkom shnayim. But yeah, we have a principle that wherever we accept the testimony of an Eid Echad, we don't view that person as an Eid Echad, but rather what? We view that person as two Eidim. Meaning when testimony of an Eid Echad is acceptable, that becomes as ironclad as the testimony of two witnesses. If that's the case, then in reality, when Eid Echad number one showed up and says, your husband died, that's as if what? That's as if what? Two witnesses showed up, and therefore, again, when the second witness shows up and says your husband didn't die, then what? We should totally ignore it. No, because remember, again, once you've already accepted the first one as two, that's it, we're done. The second one is just viewed as one witness. So essentially, you have two versus one. We should totally ignore the second witness who comes, and even if she did not yet remarry, we should what? Allow her to do so. To which the Gemara says, "Hachikamer, you're right. This is what the Mishnah means to say. Eid echad omer meis. If one witness says husband died, vitiruhu li nasei, and they allowed her to remarry, uba echad va'amer lo meis. And then a second witness comes along and says that. So remember, we'll say so. Eid echad comes along and says husband did die. They give her the license to remarry. Then a second witness comes along and says no, he didn't die. Lo teitse mehetera harishon." So says the Gemara, we read the Mishnah wrong. Lo teitze doesn't mean she shouldn't leave the marriage. Of course, if she got married, it's not a shana, she doesn't leave the marriage. What's the chiddush over here? The chiddush over here is she need not leave the state that has been conferred upon her as a result of the testimony of the first witness. Once the first witness says your husband died, that's like two witnesses establishing that her husband died, which means that now lemaisa, again, she is permitted to remarry. Once she has that status is hers. So that what? Even if another witness, an Eid Echad, comes along and says, your husband didn't die, it does not change her status or her ability to remarry. Eid Omer Meis, and most of the next case in the Mishnah was, one witness says husband died, and then two witnesses say the husband didn't die. So in that case, even if she did remarry, she has to leave the second marriage. So Gemara says, Pshita, I don't say that's obvious. No? De'in devarav shal echad makom shtayim. Because we'll say, obviously, you have an Eid Echad against two. So whenever you have an Eid Echad against two, of course, it goes without saying that what? That lemaisa, you're not going to believe the Eid Echad. To which the Gemara says, no, this is actually very interesting. Lo, tzricha bipsuli edus. And I will say, what's the case over here? The case over here is with psuli edus. Look at Rashi. Va'afagav psuli edus. Va'afagav d'shnaim sh'amru lo meis nashim hayu hare ad eid rishon batal etzlan v'itzrach lashem inan ki hay gavna. I will say, listen to this. The Gemara wants to suggest that in this case, the two witnesses that show up are edim psulim. They're people who are normally possible to give testimony to women. Two women show up. So remember again, Eid Echad shows up. Eid Echad shows up and says your husband died. Then two witnesses show up. Two women show up and say your husband didn't die. So what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says she has to leave the marriage if she remarried. What's the pshat over here? Rabbi Nechemia, the son of Rabbi Nechemia says, Kol makom shemina Torah Eid Echad. Whenever the Torah believes an Eid Echad, halach achar rov deos. It becomes a numbers game. Va'asu shtei nashim bi'ish echad, kishnei anashim bi'ish echad, and then two women who come to testify for one man are like, again, two men that come to testify for one man. I always will say, Rabbi Nechemia says something amazing. Rabbi Nechemia says that in any situation where you believe in Eid Echad, remember again, believing in Eid Echad also means that you could believe someone who's possible. It becomes a numbers game, which means that whichever side of the issue has more people testifying to it, that is the side the halacha will believe. So in this case, says Rabbi Nechemia, Eid Echad shows up and says, your husband died, and then what happened? Two Eidim, who happen to be women, show up and say, no, your husband didn't. Rabbi Nechemia says, what? Look, anytime you have Eid Echad believed, you have to look at the numbers. And halacha l'maisa, what do you have over here? You have two versus one. Two saying he didn't die, one said he did die, and therefore the two are believed over the one. V'baisim, the other possibility is, the other possibility is no. If you have an Eid Echad who shows up, and that Eid Echad is a kosher, right? That Eid Echad is someone who's kosher for Eidos. Afilu mea nashim ke Eid Echad damyon. In that case, Rabbo say, then even if 100 women come subsequently, those 100 women still only have the status of an Eid Echad. So we'll say, so again, now so what's happening here? Ella, so what's the case? What's the case in the Mishnah? Ella kigon, da'asoi isha meikara. So we'll say, what's the case over here? The case over here is that the Eid Echad who came originally was a woman. And we'll say, Rashi, in the middle over here, Kol Eichad Da'asa Eid Echad Kasher. If you're looking at Rashi, about eight lines in Rashi, Elamas Nisim Diktani Afapi Shanisei Steitze, Kegon Da'asoi Isha Me'ikara. The first woman, the first witness who shows up is a woman. And what happens? She testifies that the husband died. V'niseis Apia, the woman, the wife remarries based on her testimony. V'ashmo Inon Mas Nisim Diteitze Api Shtei Noshim Abos Acharekein, V'lo Makminon Kamaisim Emkom Eid Kasher. V'afagav Da'ach Shevina Kitre L'mishri Apumas. So we'll say, so what's the case over here? So a woman shows up and says, what? And says, what? Your husband died. The tirtzel of Rabbi Nechemya. I'm sorry, before we go on. Woman shows up and says, your husband died. And then what happened? Two more women show up afterwards and say, what? Your husband did not die. And the Mishnah of a tirtza l'derebi Nechemya hachi. And you have to understand the Mishnah according to Rabbi Nechemya in the following way. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Ko makum shemina Torah eid echad, halach achar rov deos, va'asu shtei nashim bi'isha achas, kishne anashim bi'ish echad, aval shtei nashim bi'ish echad, kepalgu upalgu damer. So listen to this. So therefore, Rabbi Nechemi will say the case is the following, that you have one woman showing up and saying that the husband died, and then two witnesses show up afterwards and say the husband did not die. So Rabbi Nechemi takes the approach that any time that you allow the testimony of an eid echad, you have to what? You have to look at the numbers. So therefore, if you have two versus one, we will go with the two over the one, and that's why the Mishnah paskins that what? That in this situation where eid echad showed up, woman eid echad showed up and said, your husband died, she remarried, then two more women show up and say, your husband didn't die, what's the halacha? Teitze. She has to go ahead and leave that second marriage because we put more stock on the majority of the testimony, which in this case is two women. Because Rabbi Nechemya says, Komakum Shemina Torah Eid Echad, Halach Acharov Deos, anytime Torah believes in Eid Echad, we go after the majority. V'asu Shtei Noshem Bi'isha Achos, Kishnei Anoshem Bi'isha Echad, and we go ahead and we treat two women who are testifying about one man, like two men who are testifying about one man, aval shtei nashim bi'ish echad. But if two women are testifying about one man, then what? Then what? Kipalgu upalgu dami. So we'll say this would be one situation where, let's say the first eid echad was an ish, was a man, and then two more women come afterwards to give testimony in a situation where the first eid echad is a kosher eid, and then the second two witnesses are, let's say, two women, non-kosher eidim. That would be a case, according to Nechemya, of palga upalga, of half and half, meaning those two testimonies would be equal and would effectively cancel each other out. So we'll say we'll step over here. But again, where this sugya ends, just to keep it simple, where the sugya ends is just in understanding the second case of the Mishnah. And the second case of the Mishnah was one witness shows up, says husband died, two witnesses then, and she married, two witnesses then showed up and said the husband did not die, so the halacha is she must leave the second marriage. The Gemara says, well, that's an obvious case. It's not obvious, because the case over here is where all of the Edom involved are all Edom psulim. They're all women, for argument's sake. You don't have to use the case of women, but that's one of the cases. They're all women. And the Chiddush is according to Rabbi Nechemya, that whenever you believe in Eid Echad, we look at the majority of testimony. And because the majority here is on the side saying that the husband did not die, therefore she must leave second marriage. We'll pick up over on the two dots tomorrow.